Yes, sir, we promised you a great man. Oh, yeah,
right. It's Andre!
The giant! WrestleMania!
WrestleMania is running wild!
My God, what the
hell? It's the man! It's
not a world that's watching!
I'm very excited to have on Steve Lombardi, a.k.a. the Brooklyn Brawler. Brawler, how are you, sir?
Very good, Peter. First thing I want to do is thank you for having me on your show. And I want to thank Matty Rock for getting me connected with you.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, shout out to him indeed, and I appreciate you coming on. I thought the timing was really great just to chat a little bit, see what you think about some of the things going on in the world, and start off, of course, by asking, you know, how surprised you were, and take us through your everywhere that your memories went when you heard about the passing of Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Oh, my God. Bobby was so close to my heart. When I heard, I cried my eyes out. I was so close to Bobby Heenan because he was my manager, and he more or less came up with the Brooklyn Brawler, and I got stories with Bobby Heenan that's in my new audio book, Brawler Unfiltered, that's on Amazon and iTunes and all that. It's incredible. If you knew him personally, did you ever get to meet him?
Yes, very recently, but we obviously he wasn't in a place where he could communicate well, so no, I never got to know him at all.
He was one of the greatest people I've ever met, and he helped my career tremendously. He launched it. Just for an example, the kind of guy he was. We're in Hershey Park. I'm wrestling as the Brooklyn Brawler. It's like my debut. He tells me, come outside. He says to me, you see that mud over there? I want you to roll around in the mud. I said, Bobby, what are you, crazy? What do you mean? He goes, I want you to be a very dirty, seedy Brooklynite. And so I do what he says, and I come out like a pig, you know what I mean? The shirt's all dirty, pants all dirty. And the people, you know, they're just getting to know me. But when I walked out with him, I'm an instant star. And then what feedback do I get from my mother? Why are you doing this? You're making me look like a bad mother. Like, I never dressed you well. And I said, Ma, it's just a gimmick. It's incredible. It's incredible.
And it ended up working so well. And, of course, the association with him and that character changed the trajectory of your career from where you had been previously.
Oh, huge. You know what the funny thing was? I was Steve Lombardi. I was getting beat every single day, every single match. I was actually on the road for so many years. I think it was six or seven before I met Bobby, and he gave me that character. And then I put a leather cap on when I first started. I just wore tights with a leather cap. First time I walked to Madison Square Garden, we walk in the back entrance. Nobody even realizes because of the black cap that I was Steve Lombardi. Could you believe that?
Something that small.
They thought I was a brand new talent that was never seen before.
So tell me about your time before that, before you got paired with Bobby Heenan, you know, the very early work when you were just Steve Lombardi, you were clearly a bad guy, but sort of like in that your character didn't necessarily have a particular thing. You know, you were just a guy who would come out. Would you consider yourself a jobber from when you started at WWE?
When I started, everybody would say, oh, he loses every night. He loses every night. And you know what I'm saying to myself inside? I deserve an Oscar because I'm able to go in the ring with Paul Orndorff, Iron Sheik, Roddy Piper in 3 hours and face every one of them, take every one of their finishes. So what does that make me look like to the people in the building?
A jobber. A guy who gets his ass
no,
beat all the
Superman,
time.
A Superman. How can I take a pile driver? How can I take a pile driver from Paul Orndorff and then come out and take the camel clutch?
Oh, because
then come out wrestle pile.
Because this was TV taping, so the same crowd would see you come out and do it over and over again.
Right, right. So they were smartened up, but the television it would show weekly.
Right.
You know,
of course.
Week after week. And I had the greatest career that I ever could imagine, and I'm the most humblest, happiest man of my life because everything that's happened to me after I parted ways with WWE, it's unbelievable. You're not going to believe what I've done. Last year, I've been gone from WWE for about a year and a half maybe, and since then, I've opened a territory in Michigan. I'm leasing a building in 3 weeks. There's going to be a wrestling school. I'm broadcasting a wrestling show on the CW. All in conjunction with UCW, and it's going to be played all around Michigan. And you know what I'm going to do that's going to really be interesting? I'm going back to 80s style.
What do you mean? What does that entail, going back to 80s style?
Okay, going back to 80s styles mean main event against, I know you use the word job, but which it doesn't offend me. I couldn't care less.
But, as I don't think it should. I mean, you can be someone who wins, you can be someone who loses. It's all ultimately right. When you're around it, what you start to realize, it's all about telling this story, and it's a character in a story. People being offended by it is I understand why it happens, but ultimately it's self-indulgent and silly to worry about wins and losses.
It is, you know. I'll tell you a little story. You know, remember Razor Ramon?
Of course.
Okay, I'm in the hallway sitting on one of the boxes with Razor Ramon. There's about 20 new guys coming in, all new talents coming in. All the other guys are paranoid. Oh, my God, they're going to take my spot. They're going to take my spot. And this is what Razor would say. The Brooklyn Brawler turned to me and said, all these new guys coming in, just more guys to put over. You know what I mean?
So exactly.
I had the job. Say it again?
No, I hear you. That's amazing. Of course. And,
yeah.
And did you see it that way? Like, did you get satisfaction when they're saying, hey, we have someone, we're bringing someone in, we want to make this guy look like $1 million. Steve, make this guy look like $1 million.
Yeah.
You took pride
in it. They don't realize I was the template in which made them either look good or bad. Like, I had The Rock's very first match. Did you know that?
I did know that. What, yeah. Tell us about that. What did you think of young Rocky Maivia when you first got him?
First of all, I had his father's first match in WWE also, which is very ironic. I know Rock since he's 8 years old. I know Rock when he was a skinny kid with an afro sitting in the dressing room. You know, when his dad was wrestling.
Of course.
So I know him. So when he grew up, he went into Canadian football, then he got hurt or something, then he wanted to get into wrestling. Then all of a sudden, he came in here, and I was just on Jim Ross's podcast. I don't know if you heard it.
No, I haven't heard it yet. Tell me.
And I said, hey, Rock, great to see you. I hug him and this and that. I said, but in my head, I'm saying, he looks like a jock. He looks like a football player. You know what I mean? I didn't see it in him right there. So they put me against him. And the Ross told me that he chose me because they knew that I would do the right thing with him and steer him the right way. So I take him to the side. I say, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? And he goes, yeah. Then he writes in his book, I wrestled a real pro in my very first professional match. Steve Lombardi, and he didn't realize that I went in the corner and I wrote down everything he said on a napkin, and I memorized it. So we go in the ring, he hits everything, double leapfrog, drop kicks, snip-ups, he hits everything on the money. But it's really weird for me to walk to the ring and then he comes out and you could drop a needle on the floor. Nobody knew who he was.
Of course.
Yeah, nobody knew who he was.
He was just generic good guy kid. There was no character.
Yeah. But he had a pineapple hair sticking up. I mean, he looked really weird. We laugh about it to this day. Rock sent me a big picture. I mean, like 2 feet by 4 feet. And it's got a picture of him hip-tossing me. And he says, I had $7 to my name when I got in the business. I can never thank you enough. That's what he sent to me.
Wow, how long ago did he send you that?
Oh, a few years back. Like maybe 10 years ago, and he put $7 in the glass. So I said, I'm going to have some fun with this. So I know it's a little weird, but I call him up. I go, Rock, I just want to let you know I got that picture you sent me. He goes, oh, Kanaka. No, Kanaka means thank you in Samoan. He goes, oh, Kanaka. He goes, no problem. He goes, you're welcome. I said, no, Rock, all I want to say to you is you could turn this picture, turn it sideways and shove it up your candy ass. I broke the glass and took the $7 out. He goes, what are you saying to me? I says, you're worth $200 million. You sent me $7, and we both laughed our ass off.
That's amazing. You say you left the WWE a year and a half ago, and everyone knew that you'd had an involvement backstage. What did your job entail over the last few years with the company?
Okay, the last few years of the company, I wrestled 17 years solid, 2 to 4 planes a week for 32 years, but 17 years wrestling. Then 15 years, I was in charge of a room called the pre-tape room, which I did all the home videos, international spots. We used to do green screens where we used to put the images on the Titantron and all that stuff. They did so many things. I shot LifeLock commercials. I did so many different aspects of different things. I always threw things. All those things you see about the breast cancer awareness on the white backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
That's all me.
So you were just a producer. You were just a producer of all varieties.
Yeah, of all varieties backstage and helped in every way I can and always got praised constantly by the company.
And believe it or not,
for a jobber, how could a jobber wrestle in Madison Square Garden over 50 times, wrestle The Rock in Madison Square Garden, win a battle royal in Madison Square Garden?
Of course.
Wrestle Shawn Michaels as the world champion because the stipulation of the battle royal was the winner of the Battle Royal wrestles the world champion in the next Garden Shot. And the only reason I got that win is because Ken Shamrock got hurt, and then Vince says, put over Brawler. He's local. Forgetting he advertised the winner is going to wrestle the world champion in the next Garden Show.
Now, do you remember that?
I mean, is that insane?
It's an amazing career, and getting to do all those things are unbelievable. Do you have any recollection? You wrestled The Rock in his first match, but you also then in 2000 had a match with him on TV where he was offering opportunities to make the main event. Do you recall that match?
Yeah. Triple H says you have to start from the bottom, your very first match. And I got to wrestle him in Madison Square Garden.
And it's funny. It's funny. My co-host, that guy Greg, just texted me and he said, I love the Brawler. He said, I never saw him win a match, and yet I pop for him every time. What do you take from that?
What I take from that is I always learn from the beginning. The match starts when you walk through the curtain, because the attitude that you portray, perception becomes reality. And if the people believe that you believe that you could beat that guy, they get pissed off at you.
How much TV are you watching these days? Are you watching Raw and SmackDown Live?
Well, I'm running my own wrestling company now, so I watch Raw. I always watch Raw, and I do everything I can. I could see the whole transition changing now. Like when I was there, it was Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. Everybody was larger than life. You know, it's crazy. Did you know that in 2012, Vince put me in a 6-man tag at the Barclays Center? Did you know that?
No. Oh, wait. I might have been there, actually.
It was me, Del Rio, who's not with the company anymore, and The Miz against 3MB. Do you remember 3MB?
Yes, I remember this match, actually. Yes.
Okay, do you remember the finish?
No. What was the finish, though?
I submitted Jinder Mahal.
You got a list.
How could a jobber, I'm the jobber who submitted the current world heavyweight champion.
That's a pretty...
And it's on WWE Network, $9.99.
It's pretty fun. Now, when you think about what your life has given you and the opportunities you've been afforded, the fun you had, when you think of the McMahon family, if someone was to say, describe the McMahon family in a few sentences, what do you say about the McMahons?
I say thank you for all the memories. That's what I say to them. And I have no bitterness of any type. I have nothing, but if I never did another thing in my life, I consider myself truly blessed.
And did you have what kind of relationship did you have with Vince McMahon?
Well, Vince McMahon was like kind of, you know, always, he didn't talk much, but he had a couple of conversations with me here and there, you know, gave me direction in a certain way. Well, do this. I remember when we first started getting big on the internet and he wanted things to be a certain way and it was all new to us. You know what I mean? And I produced that show with JBL. Remember that one? It was where he did all the politics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a patriotic set in the back and this and that. It's, you know, he talked to me about segues and this and that, do this, do that. But I never had a bad word with this man. Never. Stephanie, I give the greatest respect ever. I'm telling you, she's one of the smartest women I ever met.
I'll throw a couple of names at you right now. And right now you can go check out Steve's audio book. What's the name of the audio book, Steve?
Brawler Unfiltered.
There it is. You can get
on
Amazon,
iTunes,
and listen to Steve tell his story, which is very, very cool. I'm looking at it right now on Amazon. Just search for Steve Lombardi. It pops right out, right up. Brawler Unfiltered. I'm going to throw a few names at you, and you tell me just a couple thoughts on the people I throw at you. Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog. Wrestled him probably about 25 times. Great guy. Had a few demons. Very charismatic. The people just, you know, they just loved him, you know, because he would do all that. You know, then he would get on all fours and he would headbutt you on the ground like a dog. And I traveled with him a bunch of times. Great person, just had demons.
How about Harley Race? You get to spend any time with Harley in his WWE run?
Harley Race is a very, very nice guy. I got to know him. I never got to wrestle him. He was way before my time. But very respected in the business. Ric Flair always makes a joke. If they sent Harley Race to Iraq, the war would end. You know, that's what Ric Flair would always say, because he said he was one of the toughest son of a guns he ever met.
What about Ric Flair?
Ric Flair. I love Ric Flair to death. I think he's one of the greatest people. He's very charismatic. And the Chief J. Strongbow used to make a joke with Ric Flair. He used to go, Rick thinks it's Christmas every day. Ric Flair would walk into a bar, which he's not drinking anymore because, you know, he had those health problems and all that stuff. He would walk in, he would just give the bartender a $100 bill, take care of me. And then he would say, and everybody at the bar is on me. That's the kind of guy he is. And I and his daughter, Charlotte, sweetheart.
How about Andre the Giant?
Oh, my God. I took Andre the Giant to my mother's house.
Really? Where's your mother's house?
Brooklyn.
Okay.
In Brooklyn. This is what happened. Andre either liked you or he didn't like you. If he didn't like you, he would not talk to you. So Andre liked me. So he asked me to travel and drive him around. So I started driving him around, and he starts asking me about my mother, the Italian heritage, this and that, this and that. And he goes, boss, before we go to show, take me to your mother's house. So I call my mother up. I say, Ma, I'm coming by with a wrestler. She goes, who? I go, oh, you wouldn't know him, new guy. So I pull up to the house. My mother's up the second floor window looking out. She only sees me on the driver's side. So I say, Ma, somebody wants to meet you. Andre gets out. She goes, oh, my God. She comes running down. It was incredible.
Now, at this point, because you're working there, is your mom watching on TV all the time? So she pops big for Andre.
Andre was so popular at that time.
Of course.
It was incredible. Hey, check this out. One time I'm in a battle royal. And Andre the Giant gives me the big foot. He splashes me. I think I'm dead. Now that Morocco's in there, Bundy's in there, everybody's in there. Everybody jumps on top of Andre. I go, I'm going to die. So Andre puts his elbows in and holds him to the ground and whispers in my ear, I got you, boss. Could you imagine this?
I know. You always hear these stories about Andre and the things he was capable of doing. It's pretty amazing. One of the guys from that era that you don't hear enough stories about, who I'm sure you knew, was Big John Studd. What can you tell us about Big John Studd?
Okay, Big John Studd, I wrestled him probably about 5 to 10 times. And not very personable, you know, not the friendliest guy to talk to, but not a mean guy. But I remember being in a handicap match with three guys. You would throw all three of us to the corner, then he would jump and splash us and crush us all. Nice guy. I have nothing bad to say about him, but nothing.
But
really
not a connection either, right? I get it.
Right.
What about Bad News Brown?
Bad News Brown. I tag teamed with him a couple of times. He's a funny guy. He was a funny guy. He won the lotto in Canada before he passed.
How much did he win?
I don't know. He won quite a. I don't know if it was millions, but it was hundreds.
Oh, that was actually some good news.
Yeah, that was good. He was a nice guy, but he was very tough. He had a reputation of being a tough guy, and he wasn't very outspoken. He wasn't talkative, but I got along with him very well.
How about the Bulldogs?
Oh, Davey? I love Davey, because when Davey was with Dynamite, I wrestled him many, many times, because I'm still doing jobs, and they always took care of me in the ring. They always took care of me. They would always beat the hell out of the other guy and take care of me.
What about Dynamite? Dynamite, for being one of the greatest workers maybe of all time, he certainly has a mixed reputation. What was Dynamite like to deal with?
Well, the first day I met Dynamite was in Poughkeepsie, New York. It was his first day in WWE. I had his first match also. He walks up to me and he goes, I'll be honest with you, I hate the match because I was so green. He goes to me, are you a babyface or a heel? I go, before I even can say anything, he goes, forget it, it doesn't even matter. Because this guy was so like, snap suplex, snap this, snap that, snap this. You know, I don't want to say anything derogatory about anybody because that's not the type of guy I am. But yeah, he had a couple of things that happened that, like, you heard about the Jacques Rougeau.
Well, the Rougeau story, yeah, that is a very big one. Is that, do you remember that story?
I was there.
You were there for which part of the actual punch?
The actual punch. No, I was in the hallway, down the hall, but I seen it from a distance.
And how messed up was Dynamite when he actually took this quarter roll, as they say, a quarter roll punch to the face?
Yeah, pretty messed up, but he never messed with them again.
And did the locker room not have any sympathy for Dynamite? Did everyone think it was well-deserved?
Well, I can't speak for everyone, but back then, like Chief, I always quote Chief Day Strongbow. He goes, "Do you ever meet Chief Day, Chief Jay?
Do I what?
Strongbow? Did you ever meet?
No, Chief Day Strongbow? I've never gotten to meet Chief Jay Strongbow. No.
Oh, he was funny as hell. This is how we talked. The inmates run the asylum here. You know, and it was much different. It's more corporate now. Like if you did something like that, you would both be fired immediately.
Of course.
Back then, Vince used to say stuff like, "If the boys don't like you, you can't. You're not here." you know, but it's not like that now.
Where you were with WWE for so long, did you spend time in other territories as well?
My very, very first match, which I ever got in the ring, was Kurt Hennig in Portland, Oregon. Because Kurt came in. When Kurt first came in, I used to say, you look like Richie Cunningham. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today, if you say Richie Cunningham to some people today, they don't even know who it is. Do you know who it is?
Yeah, from Happy Days.
Yeah, because you're above a certain age, you know. And they sent him away. Vince says, this guy's too good. We got to send him away. And they sent him to Portland. And then he told me, fly down to Portland, he goes, and then come and see me. I fly down to Portland. I come to his house. He goes, challenge me out of the audience. He goes, I said, I can't do this. I've never been to me. He goes, just grab a headlock and hang on. So I go, anybody? He goes, anybody challenge me? You know, this, I stand up. I go, me. He goes, okay, let's see if you got some boots. We got some boots that'll fit you and tights in the dressing room. So then I go walk in the dressing room. All the boys block me, and they all stand, and they stand like almost like the NFL with their arms latched. You know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Kurt goes, he's me as art, you know, which is carny, which most people don't know what carny is either. You know, every wrestler when I left didn't even know what carny was. Do you know what carny is?
Yeah, of course. This is the way people communicated in the old days. Yeah.
You are more savvy to old time wrestling than the wrestlers today.
Well, I spent a lot of time, you know, I spent a lot of time learning it and studying it before I ever, you know, did very much. I always just wanted to understand it. I found it fascinating. And that's why that is the era that you find the most fascinating. Certainly. I know you early on, one of your first matches was against the Iron Sheik. Tell us about your experiences with the Sheiky.
Okay, Sheiky was stiff in the ring. He was very snug. I love Sheik. He loved to do like a German suplex, and then he used a camel clutch. But he used to always say to me, oh, Steve Lombardi, baby, you take hip toss high like Iron Sheik. I mean, it's crazy, man. I shared rooms with Sheik.
How snug was that camel clutch?
No, that wasn't that. Sometimes it was a little snug, but he didn't hurt you. Check this out. Sharing a room with Iron Sheik. You know how you know someone that shared a room with the Iron Sheik?
How's that?
When you get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning by the sound of a guy blow-drying his handlebar mustache while he's drinking a cold beer. That's a true story.
Really?
I'm telling you, that's how... That's
I believe
how,
it.
How crazy. And that's why in Brawler Unfiltered, I tell all this stuff, and I do it, it's not one of these 11-hour books, it's like an hour and 40 minutes or something, but the amount of information, my upbringing in Brooklyn was just as fascinating as my...
Where in Brooklyn are you from, Steve?
I'm from Bensonhurst.
From Bensonhurst,
Brooklyn.
Do you
live in New York? Do you live in New York City?
I do, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's on, you know Mutual High School?
No, where exactly? I don't know that part of Brooklyn well at all. I don't know Bensonhurst at all.
15th at 14th? Oh, I don't want to give my mother's address because she still lives there. But I lived in Bensonhurst.
Well, listen, Steve, I'm excited to hear all these stories. I'm going to go listen to the book right away. Brawler Unfiltered, Steve Lombardi's audiobook. Go check it out. And now that we're in contact, every blue moon, I'd love to hear from you and check in, get your thoughts. Are you looking forward to seeing the Shields match this weekend at TLC?
Yes, I always look forward to it. But, you know, it's funny. A lot of times when things get over in the beginning and then you put them back together again, it doesn't quite have as much impact.
Yeah, well, we'll see. And that's the thing. It looks like it's having a good impact for all of them. I'll be interested to see what happens. And now that they've added Kane and Braun Strowman to it, it'll be an interesting thing to see this weekend in Minneapolis. But Steve, thanks for making time. We'll talk again. I look forward to it.
Hey, and I follow you on Twitter now. I would appreciate if you follow me back. I read all your tweets and about that charisma you tweeted out today.
Oh, my man. All right. I will definitely do that. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Peter, so much.